this.
Let's do this.
Let's get this one in, baby.
Let's get this in baby. Let's get it in the can. In the can. Let's get the baby in the can. There's a sob across from George Shooter Nolan.
Reporting for duty.
Before you mention it, I know you're going to be pretty confused by it, but yes, I am using my earlier microphone. I think I'm not particularly good at setting up the settings on the other one, and it sounded to me, at least on some of my recordings, that it was talking into a can. So I've swapped it out for the moment.
Yeah, this sounds pretty smooth.
Hey, thanks. Hey, thanks. How you doing, George?
Doing okay. Just just working right now.
Yeah. Well,
like, you don't ask the waiters like if he actually enjoys waiting on you, you know.
Well, I assume he does. Why else would he do it? Why else would he spend his finite time serving me, bringing food, if it was not a passion project?
Well, I guess there are some people who enjoy waiting tables, but let's say this is like as enjoyable right here as working the salt mines.
I assume, you know, people enjoy doing it. Otherwise, why would they spend their finite time doing it?
Money, dear boy.
Excuse me, money. Money is a tool created to exchange goods and services. It is not the purpose for living. It is merely a tool.
Yeah, and then that's why some people work in the salt mines, even though it's one of the worst jobs you can do.
I think you've got
the money makes it worth it.
Yeah, well, you've got some things backwards. The idea that people would put in hours for money. Oh my goodness.
Are you from like Star Trek or something?
Yeah, I am literally from Star Trek. I am one of the Star Trek characters. We left it at a nail biting cliffhanger. But before we get into that magic, do you have any of your artisanal shout outs, George?
Tooele, Utah.
Tooele. How's Tooele doing? How are the Tooeleites?
I'm pretty sure they're doing pretty good.
Okay.
They had the episode of World's Strictest Parents filmed there. Seemed, it was a strict Mormon family.
Oh my.
They seemed like the happiest family I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope they're as happy as can be.
Yeah. Well, the dad and the son, they're in a vocal a cappella sort of chorus. That's seems like they really enjoy themselves.
That warms my heart. I'm glad they're singing it up in Tooele, having a nice time.
Yeah, and I got another one.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I can take any more of this excitement. What do you got, George? What?
Stockton, California.
Now there's a town you can hang your hat on. How's Stockton?
It's the country's most dangerous city.
Oh,
I think that's the highest murder rate in the country.
That's horrid. We wish you well, Stockton, California. We wish you well.
Yeah, I hope you get your prime crop in check, and maybe we'll stop by there and tour on our tour for the live show.
Yeah. The shooter's doing a live show, I'll watch that on the streaming service that he intends to use, no doubt, HBO.
Well, I'm talking about live in theater.
Yeah. Good luck. The shooter extravaganza coming to a town near you.
Well, I'm going to tour as, the podcast. I'm going
What?
to use the name of this show.
Well, that's all right. The shooter, the podcast shooters starring shooter show
Well,
coming to.
I mean, if you're like, yeah, I'm gonna have someone else like fill in for you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
excuse me.
it's like,
Sure.
I'll hire some other, guy to take your role.
I don't think anybody
But
could replace me on this. I have a special part to play in this experiment.
well, what was it? Like all these bands, like the Temptations, how they still tour like in casinos and stuff.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's only one original member, but they had the rights to use the name.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'd be like the te like that one guy from the Temptations who couldn't be replaced, and and 40 years later, they're still playing casinos without him.
I don't know about that. Why don't you take my Furby? He's been itching to stretch his legs, try out some new material.
Oh, it's too highbrow for our fans.
Furby, come on. He's a little guy. He's just the littlest guy. That's what people want. They just want a little guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a podcast only hosted by little guys. You're
I
like 4 foot 8, right?
I'm pretty tall. I'm
4 foot 9 on a good day.
not well. I no, I'm taller than that. Not it'd be fine if I was, I'd run between people's legs.
Oh,
That'd be exciting. It'd be like life is an obstacle course. And I just take off running busy cities, weaving in and out of the legs of those tall walkers. Is that's what I'd call them, the tall walkers.
yeah, you'd be at real at home at a in a crowd, that's for sure.
Oh sure, well, people are like horses, a horse will not step on a person. You can just lay down in front of horses and you'll be fine. People are exactly like that. It is impossible for a person to step on another person. It's an innate sense.
But they do, horses do step on snakes all the time.
Oh yeah, that's it's different.
No, it's, well, not in your case.
I it's different. It's very very different. Well, let's try, because we had an exciting cliffhanger full with to be continued and such,
Yeah.
where you were dropping some harsh harsh realities, edge of seat
Well,
stuff.
I thought that was just like a just it was just like a something I was thinking. It's like one thing I was thinking.
It was a real mic dropper. It was astounding. Care to elaborate to all the people that have been waiting with bated breath for you to finish your thought.
Well, I was just considering to give away all my video games and video game
Oh,
paraphernalia.
say it isn't. So say.
I don't know. Like, have you seen people who play video games? Do they seem like happy people?
I don't really watch anybody play video games. I could get a mirror and watch myself do it, but it'd be a bit distracting.
I've seen people play video games. They have like this dead look in their eyes.
Well,
And it's like the
that's just like
slack,
normal faces at this point, everyone.
slack jaw, open mouth.
No,
They're
that's
like in
just
a
what
trance.
people look like. You've got to kind of phase out a little bit and let the time fly by, or else how could you possibly tolerate what is asked of you? Think of all the things that we have to do. Imagine if you had to pay attention and be engaged with everything that you do every day. You'd go nuts. It's impossible to just be engaged with this meaningless wasting. What is wrong with you?
You know what actually inspired me to think about this?
What?
I saw an old commercial on YouTube for this gaming console Xbox.
Yeah.
Great commercial. What happens in the commercial
Well, I
is
don't
this woman, she's in labor, she gives birth,
know. To an
and
Xbox.
she no to a baby, right? But she
Oh.
ejects the baby with such force he goes flying. And you see, he's flying through the air, and time is accelerating. And you see him age, and age to adulthood to old age, and finally he lands right into the grave, and says, "Life is." And then there's the catchphrase, "Life is short, play more."
That's well,
Life's too short to be turned, to be hypnotized, and I don't know. Just it's like a I don't know, like video games, they
yeah.
seem like one of the biggest wastes of time of all, I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think it depends on whether you're able to get anything out of the engagement with it. Because really, when you think of finite time, a lot of what we do is boring and or unpleasant, isolated, does not enrich our lives or the lives of our community, but is just sort of
Exactly.
a
Why do more of it than you have to? Why volunteer to partake in this drudgery,
limited options. Limited options.
Because a video game is a second-rate pastime. That's what it always felt to me.
Well, yeah, but that depends on the pastimes you have and what you get out of it. If you enjoy the experience, it can take you places and be fulfilling in the same way that engaging with other activities can be. I think it can be part of a healthy diet of psychic consumption. It is not, it's not necessarily a waste. It just would be if it's compared to more fulfilling things. If you have better options, or if the way you engage with it is not pleasant, then sure, second rate or further back. It just depends on whether you like it or not.
Well, you know what? I want to leave more time for my hobby, which is full.
What?
Yeah.
What? No. What's the hobby? Fall.
My pastime.
What is it?
Philanthropy.
Philanthropy. You just want to spend all your time giving money to people.
Well, also, labor and all that stuff. Actually do the footwork.
That,
So
yeah, I
I'd
mean,
rather you know I'd rather volunteer than play video games.
well, all right, volunteer. What are you gonna do?
I read to the illiterate.
Like cats, other urban wildlife.
No, mainly people play a lot of video games.
Well, they're probably not even paying attention to you. You'd be doing just as much good reading to urban wildlife.
Well, have you heard of like a coma patient? It's still considered good to talk to them and read to them, even though they might not hear or understand,
Why is
it's
it
sort of
good?
that
It
principle.
seems like reading to someone in a coma is something that you do for yourself and not the person in the coma.
Well, doctors say to talk to people in comas. That's a one of the good things you can do.
All
It's
right.
supposed to like keep your brain kind of active. It gives you a chance of fighting out of it.
Oh,
And at
well.
least Like it's, it's good vibes, it's good to have those vibes around if people care for you and trying to treat you like you're still alive.
What's a vibe? What do you mean?
A vibe,
What's a vibe?
vibration.
It gives you, you talking to people with no receptive power sends out vibrations.
Like sound vibrations at least, if you want to,
Yeah.
own me, if you want to own me, like logically,
Yeah. Well,
well, I'm
mic'd up.
talking about,
I'm all about the rap battle mentality,
Yeah,
and this is all performative anyway, so how dare you, sir? The vibrations. How dare you say something like vibrations?
I mean in the colloquial sense. I'm pretty sure you know what I mean.
I'm just playing to the crowd, trying to make you look foolish in front of, you know, it's like a. It's like a presidential debate. We're not actually discussing policy. We're just sort of wielding social capital. It's not about, expressing what I intend to do or could reasonably accomplish or anything about the state of the world so much as it is to get little sound bites, the good little moments that can draw, the right kind of marketable attention. That's what I'm
Well,
playing.
if this was its presidential debate, this would be the point of the debate where you've sat on a Wookiee cushion.
All right. Well, I mean, you don't really sit. It sitting at all would be quite a gesture at a presidential debate. I guess some of them they sit.
Yeah, or you might like, pull out a chair and like sit on emphatically to make a point.
Well, yeah, and the whoopee cushion would be quite an exclamation mark. Something I had a thought about. Do you know? Are you familiar with the YouTube channel Cannot Be Tamed?
Thankfully, I've never even heard of it.
Okay, well, it's just a lady that talks about video games and such, and she did a recent episode where she discussed the NES version of Monopoly, and she was talking about how sort of Monopoly is it was a game that was bought from somebody else who had made it with the intent of it being an educational tool. And had been kind of portrayed as possibly, creating the monopoly as a positive. And then she kind of made it a point to say, in her own way, that A, housing is a human right, and B, being a landlord isn't a real job anyway. And that got a lot of supportive and non-supportive commentary in the commentary section. Do you have any thoughts about that, George?
About the fact that they made Monopoly a video game.
No, the I guess her main little digressions that she said that being a landlord is not a real job and that housing is a human right.
Yeah, I guess landlord is not a job. I guess you're investing, but well, they with someone who full time, who's a day trader full time, is that a real job? Like you make all your money from investing?
Well, I mean, there are easy jobs and there are hard jobs. If you're a day trader full time, you're not really creating any value or working very hard. I think the situation with being a landlord in the context of a person who believes that housing is a human right, it's less about this is not what was explained, but this is my understanding of it. It's less about how hard you have to work because There are some landlords that are very busy, and then some landlords that just sort of own the property and charge rent, and everywhere in between, I'm sure. But it's more like you have a thing, and your job is not creating value, but rather restricting it for a profit. That's in a society that assumes a or an individual within a society that assumes that a housing is a human right, and B, housing is not recognized as a human right within my society. So as a landlord, you own the property, and you're not creating value, but restricting it for a profit. You get what I'm shooting, shooter?
And how like I'm not a big fan of landlords myself,
Well,
but
I've got no particular issue with landlords
yeah,
or renting out a place or such and such. It's
I
more
guess
like
landlordism in of itself is not a description of a job, because let's say you inherit some property and you still collect rent on it even though you don't do anything, you know.
yeah.
I guess that's not really a job. It's like it's having an asset, and
Yeah, and then charging people to use it in a situation where not everybody has access to that. It would be like not everybody gets to eat, but you charge for food. Like imagine a world where world A, world B, right? World A, people live on the street, people live in homes. And if people can afford to, they purchase or rent or lease homes. And then in situation B, everybody at least has a roof over their head and a bed to sleep on and such. In which situation, A or B, does it seem like the role of a landlord would be, I don't know, more morally an issue, like the one in where A, you get to sort of choose whether or not people stay at a property, and if they don't, they could go live on the street, or B, you're offering that, but anybody has their own place anyway, so you offering it would just sort of be I don't know if people choose to go to you, they have the option, but it doesn't mean that they would be living on the street unless they use your
They're not like
services.
depending on you, on your kindness.
It's like
They're not at your mercy.
if everybody has access to safe food, it makes sense to be able to have a business where you sell food and you can charge whatever you want and people go to you because they want that specific food. But in another situation where not everybody has food and you're charging for food, you're essentially preventing people from having something that they need to live. Like, are people entitled to the basic necessities
Well,
and they
if you're
have the
selling,
option?
you could say that, like, I mean, in a situation where like food is not guaranteed, which it isn't, if you sell food by charging people, you're restricting access to starving people. However, don't you have to, in order to get food, don't you have to make money? And making, selling food is a way to make money to feed yourself, you know?
I think her deal about landlord isn't a real job and housing is a human right. I think that there's some sense in there. However, let's say if you're not a landlord, you don't have a way to make your own money and get your own food and housing and all the things that you need to live. So if a person is a landlord, that doesn't inherently like it shouldn't inherently cast a negative light upon them because they're doing what they have to do to continue to exist. When somebody gets to a level where they're exploiting and harming so that they can have more than enough, that's different than just sort of being in a role so you can just exist within the lanes that already exist in the society that you're in, right?
Well, if you're not in this society, if you're not growing you're going out of business.
But like, you need to do what you need to do to stay alive. So it's not really so much the fault of the landlord. The point is well taken. But the landlord could just be somebody that does what they need to do to live. Like it's all well and good that says that because society is exploitive, that everybody should be on a hunger strike. People just generally don't choose to do that. Like, how far can you go to blame somebody for doing what they need to do to survive when it's plugging into existing systems?
I guess you could say every situation's different, right?
Yeah, it's certainly different, and there's a different difference than a slumlord in a big city and somebody renting out one of their rooms so that they can afford their own bills and such. Different. So I think that she expresses kind of a good moral position, but one that is not necessarily applicable to reality to the extent of her disdain. Or I don't know. I don't want to read into too much what you're saying, because what she's saying, it seems right to me when you say A, housing is a human right, and B, being a landlord is not a real job, when you consider that it's just sort of a role to keep people away from having something that they need. It's not wrong, but it's not as if like every landlord is some kind of slumlord. They're just sort of checked into
Most
an
of them are.
unbalanced system. Must what?
Most of them are.
I mean, it's
Most of them are like it was a big co corporations. Most landlords are. It's not even like a single person.
oh yeah, and if you own any amount of property, whatever your intentions and behaviors are, if you can make more, like the economy drops in the toilet and people aren't able to pay their rent, you might just sell out all your property and kick out all the people who live there. They do that with apartment buildings and trailer parks, and that people live there. They can't afford to live anywhere else. They're not able to pay the rent. You can't kick them out, and so you sell the whole property and force everybody out into worse situations. So even if you mean well, you can often be, just to the realities of the system that you're in, forced to take foul actions.
Yeah, well, like you have to do whatever's best for your company. Like the greater good of society is not a consideration if you're trying to make money
No, it,
in this sort of society,
yeah,
you know.
apart from individual actions, you don't really take any altruistic behavior again for your business unless it has some use in marketing. All the positive actions for a business are really just so it looks good. So you have to do whatever's best for your business, because we're all dependent on the business, and the prime motivation of the business is to consume more profits. So if you're competent at doing that, or lucky, then you succeed.
Well,
And
it's if you work with a corporation, it's illegal to knowingly take any action that is against the business interest of the corporation.
you say illegal?
Illegal, yeah. Something it's like something about duty to the shareholders. So if you were intentionally if you were in charge of a corporation and you intentionally pursued something to not make money, like clearly at odds with the money making interest, you'll get sued or something like that.
Oh, you could get
It's
sued if you misled the shareholders, or if somebody's invested in your company and
and
you do something that loses them money. Yeah, I suppose you could sue them.
but like but the thing is, corporations are people. Imagine, have you ever seen like a corporation like walk around on the street?
Yeah,
Imagine.
they're not people.
Well,
So
legally they're people.
no, I know legally they're people. They what I think it's the 14th Amendment. I would need notes. I think it was a head of one of the railroad moguls who was in the Supreme Court for a
Vanderbilt?
time. I don't know. I just sort of know basic, big business guy. I believe he was associated with railroads. He goes to the Supreme, he is like on the Supreme Court for a time, and then he's off the Supreme Court, and then goes in front of the Supreme Court and argues that this new amendment that was put into existence to give formerly enslaved people the right to vote also said other things, and among the other things, it was that corporations are legally recognized human beings. That's a subject I should really have notes on to be able to speak at length, but the idea that corporations are human beings, to quote Mitt Romney, corporations are people too, my friend, or I suppose that's a paraphrase. I don't know. He said that. It's a distortion of something that was meant to give more human recognition to humans. It's
Well, the re
time for
my
a
my favorite
break.
reason. Well, okay.
Say something snappy, George.
Yabba dabba doo.
Yeah, but yeah. You
My favorite part of the corporations or people rule, though,
Oh
is makes me use my imagination, because I like to imagine what a corporation would be like if he was a flesh and blood person.
yeah. Well, that'd be give us your imaginings, because I just went on a cute rant about some serious topics, just sort of lightly brushing over them, sounding like a real piece of ass. So
Well, anyways, like imagine a person who's like nakedly trying to cost analyze every cost benefit, at all times, up to including murder.
Well,
Like
I mean,
imagine meeting someone, like he's like, you know what, I'm going to kill you because it's worth financially more to me to kill you.
well,
Like
yeah,
the
I
only reason you're, or he's like, actually, someone, who's like, the only reason he's not murdering you is because it'll cost him too much, more than it's worth.
yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there are things that consider that like vehicle recalls. They'll balance the expected cost of lawsuits with the cost of a recall. And then there are all sorts of businesses that more directly profit on human death and suffering, not just by cutting corners, but by as part of their market. Like in Americans, I think the highest cause of death is heart disease. We consume many things that we probably should not. But like, if you imagine a business as a human being, then what you've got is a I mean, it's always going to be a sociopath. And sometimes they'll be friendly, sometimes cold. Sometimes they'll help you in exchange for something, or sometimes they'll harm you. But it's just going to be, it's like a big string of sociopaths of varying intelligence.
Yeah, everything there, is purely self-interest.
Yeah, well, I mean, it exists to make a profit. That's its
Someone whose sole purpose in life is to make profit.
Well, yeah, if you're unable to compete, you go away. I don't really have a problem with that sort of entity existing. My problem.
Imagine living next door to one of those people.
Oh well, I assume. But like I don't think the problem is that people are allowed to set up these collective persons as much as it is that this is the type of entity that ultimately has the say in
In society, how we run it.
it directs policy. That is
Yes.
the first value when directing policy.
Yeah. I mean, that's my main problem, so.
I mean, if you could opt into it, I mean, ultimately, you're thinking of stages of society where you're hoping a society is going to go. First, you've got sort of a society exists to elevate a single person, all your kings in that. Then you've got a society that allows people to create value for themselves. So merchants, which were the people that were creating value for society, even though they weren't getting a whole lot of benefit from it, it was just sort of one guy. And so you go on to people are able to create the value of society. And then it seems like the ideal movement would be something that returns to almost an earlier stage of society where it's more about uplifting all the people within society. So like are we going the direction of I don't know, back to a king where the human race just sort of evolves to prop up a single individual? Are we going to some kind of a neo-noir Blade Runner type thing where it's business is run amok, and then you've just sort of got these swaths of poor that are being divided from the feudal lord capitalists at the top that own all the monopolies that run the world? Or do you get something that kind of transitions to being more concerned with the human welfare that uplifts people, and then gradually the businesses fade away as we get into post-scarcity, and it's really just sort of about individual human propagation, and that organizations are primarily created for unity and development and that type of stuff, you know?
Well, you know what? We're actually working towards my ideal society.
Yeah, you were for the king version,
Yep.
right?
If I was so I do. I'm working towards this project is a movement to help work towards our ideal society where I'm immortal and I'm the king for life. That
Well,
would be my ideal system of government.
so it seems to me, right? If you're at the you're either a king or you're at the head of one of these organizations that has to fight it out until there are only very few businesses left, supporting a high class that is totally divided from anybody else. So,
Yeah, it's a whole lot of
royalty.
monopolies.
Yeah, royalty or a class of people that have come out like royalty or a new royalty that's come out of commerce. It seems like you get a division. Like if we become a spacefaring species, you get a division of the population where as soon as automation reaches a particular point, there are going to be classes of the human race that they don't really need. So you either leave them behind, or if they occupy a space you don't want, kind of in the practice of I don't know, imperial human groups, when there is a group of people that they cannot use, you set them aside in I don't know, you set useless eaters aside with a final
You
solution
know
to
the
use some code.
was it the Nazis were actually the first people to invent the term useless eaters
Well,
in propaganda.
that's kind of the reference, if but they did it sort of more with the fascist ideology to scapegoat just a group of people to justify their own power. You know, all the problems in society are because of these people. But you know,
that's because they're the surplus. They're surplus. You know, there's not enough productivity to keep them employed, so they're not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But like, if there's a space age or future thing where you have populations of people that you don't need,
you could use those people to make, you know, more industries, because there's, you know, you could have unlimited growth, you know.
Yeah, but what if you don't need more industries? What if you get to the point where automation gives people taking up resources away from you?
Well, people are driven to keep on trying to improve their lots in life. No matter how good it is, they're still be trying to work to improve and expand.
Well, yeah. People generally. But if you've got like a ruling class that is uses labor to create products, to sell to people, and that's how it keeps itself alive. What if you no longer...
Well, they don't want to grow and expand. They want to stay the same so they can stay in power.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that the power is created by you get people to work for you, you create something, and then you sell it back to people. But you know, you get further and further away. Like there are populations today, like when they're talking about unemployment numbers, they always quote exaggerated numbers that do not take into account the true American unemployment, because there's an unknown amount of homeless people that do not buy things and they do not create things. They are not valuable to the system. And so over time, fewer people able to buy things, fewer people able to be employed, and automation sort of taking away more jobs and making the need to use people smaller, the population that's affected. You what?
George Carlin was actually saying why you need the poor.
All right.
It's the scare the hell out of the middle class.
What's the middle class?
People who work. So I guess you could interpret it as in they need like at least some poor people just to decrease leverage for, you know, people who work. If people who work, like, you know, strike, they can employ these army of desperately poor people at any time, you know.
Sure.
And they can drive wage, because if, you know, if those people who are, you know, quote unquote middle class, you know, want a higher wage, they can be replaced by a really poor person.
Yeah.
Anytime. So that's why you need, like, you know, some, you know, a healthy amount of poor people in society.
Yeah. It's a good mark against collective bargaining. It's something to run from, but it's not really a good solution for, like you say, you opt in society because you're afraid
I'm saying that as I'm a person who's a corporation. So that's what I would say.
Well, yeah, it's part of the rationale.
Benefit me.
But the fleeing from poverty is not the best incentive, because people do continue to become poor, and I don't know, like, if you live your life
well, poor, eventually crisis paying... comes.
You what?
Yeah, eventually crisis comes.
Yeah. Well, no. Crisis comes. I mean, things spiral downward. If you're poor, you're paying less in taxes, so your local institutions, most notably education, become poorer in quality, so your children are going to be more likely to be poor off than you are.
As a corporation, like, you, your children being poor doesn't really concern me, because I'm, you know, as long as it makes me money now, you know.
Yeah, but like you say, that the middle class, it's unclear what that is when you look at research where people self-identify, all the way from you know, at one end of the spectrum, somebody that's a paycheck away from being homeless, all the way to millionaires. They will all opt in and say, I am middle class. It's more of a stigma thing than an accurate identifier. There's no the right smack in the middle when you're talking about on one end of the spectrum, people that do not register at all anywhere to at the top of the spectrum, people keep making hundreds of times more than the person, right below them. Like where's the middle of that?
Supposedly, there's like a middle class. I thought to ask George Carlin next time I see him.
Oh yeah,
I think he
well,
meant, yeah.
I like
I
George.
have a personal question.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So you say that like working is not necessarily was it poverty is not necessarily the main motivation to work, right?
Yeah.
So, you
I
know,
mean,
the
it's
only
used
reason
as
I'm
one of the
doing
main
this,
motivations.
was it?
It's used as one of the main motivations, but poor people
Yeah.
stay poor and get poorer. So it's not really like you would think extreme poverty would motivate people to work harder if that was the optimal motivator.
Well,
But poor people just
the
get
only
poorer
reason I'm
over
doing
time.
this podcast is because like I want to eat tonight. I don't want to starve, you know.
How, which
That's my main motivation.
you're well, all right. Thank you for admitting to your corruption. What was your question?
So, like, is was it the of avoiding is avoiding po like crushing poverty your main reason, one of your main reasons to work?
Me?
Yeah.
That is totally it. No, if I had my basic needs met and I was able to just sort of participate, I try to find something that was more meaningful and less valuable. I'd probably spend my time in creative pursuits. I don't do things that I don't like to do for any other reason than I need the money.
Yeah.
Sorry. No. I'm not there for the paycheck. I just love the hustle.
House. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm
Yeah,
all
it keeps
yes
you
or no,
sharp.
sir. Well, yeah, I like to keep sharp. If somebody's weak, I will push them out of the way. This is survival of the fittest. I work for mine. You're going to work for yours. I mean, you don't just do it for the paycheck, do you?
This
Anything.
well at the end of the day, yes, only for the paycheck.
What?
Yeah, just
What
yeah,
the?
this
What?
is
What is the
I was
matter
saying
with
this is
you?
like the salt mines.
I think
I'm
just
paying for
admit.
waiter school. I'm using
There are so many questions and not a whole lot of answers, but I think when you don't have any power, then somebody, when you're in a position and you have no bargaining power, then somebody is going to dictate the terms of your life,
Yeah.
and you just have to cope or scramble for something else. So not knowing all the answers and not and and you know being aware that there is no perfect answer, I would encourage people to unionize if they're able to, like
I was,
not be open about it, but
you know what we can do in those secret union meetings is play Monopoly.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, why not? It passes the time, and those games last a long. You know what would be good is if you could, like Monopoly, engage in some sort of an isolated task for long periods of time. You don't have to be around other people. You can just sort of sit and stare and move your fingers and just be engaged with that. That would really pass the time.
Internet chess. That's internet chess. That's what you're describing right there.
No, look, you don't need to. No, you can't count on somebody else being around. With everything is attacking you from all sides, you need to have a form of recreation that you can do by yourself. Just sort of check out, engage in tasks that doesn't
just
create value, social capital, and you just you know, do it because you enjoy it.
Oh, I thought you meant like a hobby.
Yeah, like you know, I'm trying to get you back on team video game. Coming back around.
But you don't think internet chess is like the most ideal hobby, at least from what you're describing?
I mean, if you like it, it's fine.
I'm surprised. You ever played internet chess?
I have no idea.
Like on I remember on Yahoo that was a big thing. Everyone played chess on the internet.
I don't remember.
Oh man, it was a pretty crazy scene. It was you go into like it kind of looks like a chat room, I think, and then you get into like a pool of people with your skill level, and you could like message these people. It was kind of like it was one of the first social media sites. Now I think about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember MySpace. You could kind of decorate your page, and then you had you remember that thing where you had like eight friends and
top eight, yeah.
Yeah, and you're like showing on your page, your front page, I like these eight people the best, and then you order them in sort of a rank.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of a Seinfeld episode.
Oh yeah,
where Seinfeld's dating this lady. I think she puts him on her speed dial, and she clearly moves people up and down on the speed dial depending on how she likes them.
Right.
And her stepmother added him on speed dial because she was jealous that he took that he took her spot at number one on the speed dial.
Yeah, I remember the premise. Did they have kind of like just comically, but sort of a love triangle thing where they were both fighting over Jerry and who has him on the speed dial and such.
Yes.
Yeah. That show's pretty good. I like the old Seinfeld.
That Kramer, he deserves to have like $1 billion. He's brilliant. He has not made enough money in his career.
I have always liked the idea of levels. I thought that was a cool idea. Just like you couldn't move furniture around, but imagine instead of furniture, just the layout of your home is things are at different levels. So you don't need to just go buy chairs and tables and stuff. It's just part of the floor, part of the walls. I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, well, they kind of had something like that in the 70s where you'd have a pit in the middle of the floor where you slept.
Hey,
you ever see those?
Where you sleep in the floor?
Yeah, well, there's like a...
Oh, like a little rectangular pit, and that was your bed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems familiar. That'd be fine. You just put blankets and pillows in there. If they're able to get to the point where they're able to 3D mass produce houses and stuff for like your low income housing, if our friend, our close personal friend, the current richest guy in the world, instead of doing, you know, bad highways that don't have a whole lot of access for emergency services to get through, if I recall right, but instead, you know, producing house, it'd be interesting if they had like maybe stackable things so they could, you know.
So I think he's actually doing that now.
I mean, that'd be great. Yeah, if they could do like stackable houses where it's just sort of one piece with the wiring through, and I mean that could be an option to have some sort of furniture, or you know, even fold out furniture. You see that with some of those tiny houses or people that live in RVs, or I don't know, Japanese hotels.
That seems a little too small for me.
All right.
I mean,
All right
I
then.
like if I had a home, it would have a love pit in it. I think that's what they call it, like a sleeping pit.
I'd sleep in a pit. Why not? I've been
Yeah.
sleeping under a table, and there are spiders here. Remember last time where I yelled into the microphone because there was a spider?
Yeah.
That was something.
Yeah, do you ever hallucinate that there are spiders crawling on your skin?
I suppose I can't tell you whether or not I hallucinated. Perhaps I just have them crawling on my skin. I had this dream the other night. I have these weird dreams, someone was telling me in a dream that I had the case. They're saying how all these things were lies and that I had a case of Catholic flesh, and that stuck in my head. But I woke up this morning like beckoning a ghost. Like I woke
Continue.
myself up calling to a ghost.
So you were fully awake when you were calling for the ghost?
No, like I was in the dream, the dream was calling for a ghost, and I called, and I woke myself up calling the ghost. And seconds after I woke up, after waking myself up, calling the ghost along, the alarm went off.
That is crazy.
Yeah,
You
that's
know, ghosts, they do affect electricity and stuff.
well, I don't know about that.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much documented. That's why all the ghost hunters use these radio machines to detect ghosts. So that's like the freakiest thing I've ever heard happen. So it was very supernatural what happened to you.
I mean, this is one of the things where it can't be measured, recorded. It would be easy to lie about, and if it didn't exist, people would make it up anyway. So it's just sort of interesting anecdotal stuff.
So I remember you were saying that aliens and ghosts and supernatural stuff is all fake,
No.
yeah, you said it was like it was all fake, the paranormal stuff doesn't exist, right? And I was
Oh, wait. What, make the list again. Aliens, ghosts, and what?
I don't know, Bigfoots, I don't know, like psychic powers,
I mean,
paranormal
well,
stuff.
here's the thing. The only thing that I know is that I know nothing. There's nothing that I'm aware of, but you make certain leaps based on what you can observe and what has apparently been research. You kind of hedge reality a little bit, and so first aliens. There's a whole lot of world out there, or universe out there. But you're talking, I don't know, these what's the term for like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, the
Cryptids.
cryptid. Thank you. Yeah, cryptid.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence for the existence of Bigfoots,
Well,
that's for
there's a
sure.
lot of anecdotal this and that. It's just sort of all relying on hearsay or ideas or people making things up or stories. Like if something cannot be observed or measured in any reliable way, and there's no reason for it existing other than something that somebody said that they saw, there's not enough for me to go. So I'm not saying it's fake.
Well,
It's just sort of the unindicated, based on our limited ability to understand the world around us. So there could be
as far as I
ghosts everywhere,
understand,
but they're not, it's not reproducible information.
yeah, but still, as I understand that, there probably is,
I can't take. I mean, I have an agnostic position with that type of stuff, but I'm not gonna say that I believe in in Ghosts when there's nothing really other than anecdote that
All right.
indicates it.
How many ghost stories have there been in history? Like, how many alien stories have there been in history?
People have
Like,
told weird
millions, right?
stories about a lot of things, and they're repeating themes. I'm not going to say that somebody making things up, people are not infallible. People make things up all the time, and there are a lot of things in human history and culture that are just crap that people said that stuck. That doesn't mean
What?
everything that we can think of is real.
So all those, I'm saying, let's say, how what percentage of all those thousands of stories are real, are fake? Are they all, is all, they're all fakers, right? 100%. Anyone
I'm
who's
not
like
saying that
told a
everything
ghost
is fakers.
story.
And I'm not saying that people that believe in ghosts are fakers. I'm not saying that I mean you just sort
Well,
of
no,
look
just
at
say, what's the
what is
percentage?
not realistic.
What do you think the percentage of people who tell ghost stories, right, are lying about it?
Like just totally lying?
Yeah.
Just to make it up?
Yeah.
I think that would be a minority. I think that people want to believe. I think people would find an excuse to believe in things anyway. I think that your total flim-flammers are a minority. It's kind of like how every time I go out driving, because I go the speed limit. There's always going to be somebody tailgating me, or it seems like it, but in reality, most people are probably okay drivers. It's just there's such a there's enough of them that it makes it seem like everybody's doing it.
Yeah, that's the situation I'm in with this. So, yeah, yeah, everyone's, it's so, there's so many stories exist. There has to be something, some truth there, so.
I don't know if that's enough evidence for me.
Well,
Because I
I'm
think that
not
these are
like
things.
I'm not Oxford, I'm just a regular guy going about, his life. Not everything has to be peer reviewed. I just some things, like, by observing, like, oh, the sky is blue. That's kind of how how I see it
No,
with the
I
paranormal
get
stuff.
that. I mean, for me, it's just sort of something to speculate on. I certainly hope that what's the line? I try to think of something specific and I lose it. Who directed the Shining and Clockwork Orange? And
Stanley Kubrick.
I believe on the set of the Shining, he said something like, and this might just sort of be hearsay, but I believe he said something like every ghost story is ultimately a good story. I like very much the idea that this what can often be a brutal existence has some sort of grander meaning, and that it doesn't just puff out. I like the idea of ghosts and spooky things because it not only implies the I don't know, a longer lifespan for a human being, but
Yes,
there's
so
some
as you
purpose
say,
to it.
believing ghosts is a perfectly healthy thing to do.
I mean, it's not a
Believing aliens
it's not a strange
is very
thing.
healthy.
It's a normal thing. I
It's normal and healthy to think of, to believe in aliens.
I don't know. I don't know if it's healthy or not. I think taking a hard line on anything has the potential of becoming unhealthy. But if somebody like believes without proselytizing, basing any decisions on it, or harming anybody over their beliefs, then knock yourself out. If it gives you something, but nobody knows anything about anything. And then when you take a step saying, "I know such and such." Then you get to the point where I think you open yourself up to being fooled because you're fooling yourself, because you don't know anything. You just sort of, ab observe it. There's
Have
no.
you heard of this guy called Whitley Strieber?
Maybe. I would think I'd know him with a name like that.
Yeah, he was the guy who wrote about abductions. I think that movie Contact.
Oh yeah. Okay. He's the one that wrote it, and then he didn't like the movie.
I think yeah. He's the guy who actually did get abducted by aliens, and he write like a million books about his accounts, of being abducted.
Yeah, all
I
right.
think Whitley Strieber was lying.
I'm not gonna call anybody. Well, I mean, probably.
Well, I have a question
I'm
though.
not.
Do you agree that Will, have you ever read his books?
No.
Oh, you should check out his books. He's probably the greatest writer who ever lived.
Well, all right. Maybe at some point. I'm reading.
Like he wrote a story so good and compelling that people thought it was nonfiction.
That happens anyway, and there are a lot of really boring nonfiction books.
Yeah, it's true.
So, that's not the best accolade. I hopefully there was some grand truths to be found in this interaction, but I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap it up because we're pretty far over time. And we're getting to a real spooky place. Do you have any final wonderful things to say, George?
I'd like to make a shout out to
Oh, please, yes.
San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, cool. I like good old San Antonio. What do you have to say about San Antonio?
It's the birthplace of Whitley Strieber.
Well, hope you're well, Mr. Strieber, wherever you are.
I think he's in Texas.
Well, all right. Best to Strieber, best to all of Texas, the United States, and the world, and any of those spooky aliens out there.
Well, especially tech, especially San Antonio.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
All right.
I don't want to get cut off, so. Thank you for your visit, George. It's been magical.
All right. Take care.
All right,
I'm waiting for the check.
bye-bye. Keep waiting. Keep waiting. I need some gold
It's in the
teeth.
mail, right?
Non-committal response. It's Bye 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 bye
Bye-bye,
bye.
as we say.
Yeah, patented catchphrase. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Why?